if I wanted to be the ultimate security company, I would just come in and shut down your internet access.
No, really?
Then you'd be fine.
You're listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of Security First IT and HIPAA for MSPs. Joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. What's going on, Donna? You got me where I can't say it without thinking something else.
Yeah. David's securityfirstit.com just created some problems for me. Well, problems for David after I noticed how to say it. Yeah. I'm doing good, except for the allergies, as you can probably hear, somewhat stuffy.
Yeah. Oh, pollen everywhere.
Yes, it's pollen season in the South, which is better than the continuation of snow season in the Northeast.
This is true. But we are scheduled to have a torrential downpour all day tomorrow, so that'll wash a lot of that away.
It's scheduled? You have it on your schedule?
I have it on my schedule.
Or is it forecasted?
No, I scheduled. I put in for it last week. It's being delivered tomorrow.
He's the rain man. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. So... Very good. So today we have a new sport that we're hearing about. It's called extreme vendor vetting.
Some interesting stuff coming down the pipe. I mean, people better start paying attention. I mean, we were just talking about this yesterday, and we actually had another thing planned to record. We're spreading things out because some news that we literally just got while we were preparing to record.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the time this comes out, though, it'll be old news.
Yeah. So, we have to often change midstream. So, today is definitely one of them.
Yeah.
But,
It works for us sometimes. So, welcome to the ride. We've made quick notes and changed things over. We were going to cover the other notes I had from the HIPAA Summit, and we are covering part of them because they fit perfectly with this, but there were too many things in the news.
Oh, I know. We had to throw most of it out on the back burner, but crazy stuff.
We moved it out. But the Vandy study, you know, we talked in the last episode of how patient safety was at least many times mentioned in the HIPAA Summit for the first time, where you're sure they were listening to us and stealing from us.
Yeah. They were just borrowing. Yeah.
Borrowing. All right. So the Vanderbilt study came out that said that they have tracked, according to their study, 21 patient deaths that can be related.
2,100.
I'm sorry. You're right. I'm looking right at it. It's the pollen, man. It's the pollen. 2,100 patient deaths that can be tied to data breaches.
Isn't that crazy?
It's a little scary. And I hadn't had time to dig into the study and really know about it, so I said, well, we'll talk about that later. And then we had the Delta breach, which, you know, we talk about vendors and software and how things can happen. And apparently Delta's had a huge breach, and it dealt with a plugin they used on their website from another vendor, which we'll tie in again in a moment, knowing your vendors.
Stay tuned.
And Panera Bread has now announced the data breach. And the scary part of that one is the researcher found this data that was really not data that you wanted publicly available and kept telling them about it. And they didn't do anything until they went public, or at least that's the story we're getting. So we'll have to find out more about that. And we were talking about these stories, and do we try to do these stories when this story came in?
Like, literally, like, oh my God.
I was like,
stop
what?
The press. Stop the press.
Wait a minute. We get all these alerts and stuff. So, in the midst of it, we get an alert that the headline is from the New Jersey Attorney General Office. Virtua Medical Group agrees to pay nearly $418,000. Titan Data Security to settle allegations of privacy lapses concerning medical treatment files of patients. Whew. Bam.
Okay.
So this virtual medical group, and it's apparently like 50 practices or something, and they have agreed to pay let's see, 407,184 in civil penalties, which this shows you they actually use the statute to calculate these things, and $10,632 in reimbursement of the division's attorney's fees and investigative costs.
Hmm.
Bam. So 417,816. Let's just call it 418. But with that in mind, we would say, why?
What happened? What happened?
Yeah. Well, and we'll get to it in a minute, but they're also on a corrective action plan. So this is not OCR, and I'd like to make the announcement right now. Based on this information, if you're going to get investigated, you're better off having the OCR investigate you than the state attorney general's office, because they ain't playing.
At least in New Jersey.
I know. At least in New Jersey. But you know, some of these other states are going to start paying attention because they get to keep part of the money.
Right. This, it's worth repeating, this is not OCR. We haven't hit HIPAA yet. And they have. No,
well, the state attorney general, part of high tech that most people miss is the state attorney general have the ability to now use HIPAA in their investigations and their penalties.
Mm.
And OCR says, go right ahead.
Sure enough.
Yeah. You do that on our behalf. But here's the thing is, you know, everybody's talking about OCR not having enough funding to do these enforcement activities. Well, if they're going to push it out and encourage the AG's offices to do it, and oh, by the way, you can keep part of the money,
mm-hmm.
and that means your state gets to decide what's happening to you, and they get this, wow, in New Jersey, you better be paying attention, because it looks like they went spelunking. They were up into all the dark spaces shining a flashlight on it. So, you want to hear the story, David?
I do. Absolutely.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to tell the story. So, you know, we have more of those.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Okay, this goes back to 2016. So, we're not talking 2014 or anything like a lot of these. This is fairly recent considering, and it's right before the healthcare data breach thing went nuts. So, right in that same time frame. And as I mentioned, Virtura or whatever, we're going to call it VMG, just like everybody else does in the story. On January 22nd, 2016, they received a phone call from a patient indicating that her daughter had found portions of her medical records from the gynecological oncology specialists on Google.
Not good.
No. Nobody wants any records on Google, you know, but the division, the AG's division investigation found that at the time, VMG was not aware of the source of the information viewed by the daughter because their business associate, Best Medical Transcription, had not notified them of the security breach.
Hmm.
Now, Best Medical Transcription is a business associate based in, wait for it, Georgia.
Where Georgia. All those stuff happens.
I don't know how it keeps, you know, coming back into my backyard, but they are a Georgia-based vendor hired to transcribe dictation of medical notes, letters, and reports by doctors at 3 of the 50 practices. So just 3. You know, they got 50 practices, this one company working with 3 of them. So very low numbers in the big picture of the group. And this is going to be so many great examples for me to use. I can't begin to tell you all the places I'm going to use this case as an example. Because it tells us so many things that the vendor updated software on a password-protected file transfer protocol, which that alone, it's not SFTP or we're not going to go down that nerdy path, but it's listed as an FTP site where the transcribed documents were kept. And during the update, the vendor, which by the way, it doesn't say whether they have an MSP or not. This could go further downhill.
Mm-hmm.
The vendor unintentionally misconfigured the web server, allowing the FTP site to be accessed without a password. We all know that means, you know, anonymous access.
But mm-hmm.
Yeah. And not only that, then it was clearly indexed and cached by Google.
Mm-hmm.
So now when you have your text going out and updating software on a web server, you're a nervous wreck, aren't you?
Yes. Fortunately, we don't really have any clients with their own web servers. We try to throw everything to a third party.
Yeah, but still, you know, it's like if they're messing with accessibility to the network or information from outside to inside.
I'm nervous just to give them email access.
Well, statistically, that's where most of the problems come from. But overall, it affected 1617, that's weird, New Jersey patients, residents. And they were notified of this breach in early March 2016. So the vendor had a BAA. So most people would say, oh, well, this happened. And, you know, you and I, when we first saw it, oh, they probably didn't have a BAA.
Right.
Nope, they had one. Yeah. Had a valid one. They had a BAA, and the BAA had a 20-day notification requirement.
What?
Now,
it's a lot.
Well, you know, we've been in a debate recently. I mean, I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had about, you know, that timing on a business associate's agreement, how long they have to tell you about a data breach.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about this yesterday.
Yeah, I know. Because one of my clients wanted it like immediately. And I'm like, wait a minute.
You know, and we recommend 3 to 5 days. Because number one, I don't want you to just say, hey, we're panicking, bye. You know, I want you to be able to tell me some stuff about it. And it takes a minute to figure that out. But, you know, it's as soon as possible, but no later than 3 days or 5 days, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's reasonable, don't you believe?
Yeah.
I need to know something's going on.
I try to get a little more than that, but not because I want it. I want to have it available. Because it's the bad thing about it is if I have a vendor that has an issue, I don't know how long I'm going to be able to, you know, what it's going to take to get that information from them and then formulate it to, you know, give to my client. But, you know, I want some leeway, but 20 days is a lot.
Right. Well, the law actually would give them 60 days.
I know.
But the law also says you are allowed to negotiate a shorter time frame.
Right.
But it cannot be less than 60 days. Well, this is exactly why I want the shorter time frame. Because they got blindsided by it. You know, so I don't want to find out from a patient or the FBI calling me or, you know, there's a dumpster diver, a local reporter standing in a dumpster outside my office. That's not how I want to find out.
Mm-mm.
I want to find out because you told me.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned this before that, you know, if you've got several vendor downstream and everybody's taking 60 days, then how many months is it before you even find out about it?
Yeah, that's the scary part. So even look at this 20-day. Let's say we did the 20 days. So you and I both bet that there's an MSP involved. I doubt that Best Medical Transcription, it is the best. I doubt that Best Medical Transcription has their own IT department. Maybe they do. We just got this, so I haven't done any research. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Who knows? But I'm guessing an MSP is involved somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We hope it is, because we hope it's not the I got a guy approach.
Oh, I hope not.
And for those of you who don't know, I got a guy means you're not using a professional company that does IT support, managed services, and all of that. I got a guy means, what is it you were saying the other day? The doctor's nephew is good with computers, something like that.
Yeah.
So we had the BAA. So let's say that the 20 days is for best transcription services, and then they have 20 days to tell you from the time they discover. And let's say that the MSP is the one who figured it out, and they had 20 days to tell. So you got 40 days before it even had to get to VMG, potentially. So when they're talking about these time frames, it's very reasonable that it wouldn't necessarily have gotten to them yet. If they say it happened in January 2016, they don't tell us what day that they made the change to the server, but they do tell us that they corrected the misconfiguration, removed any transcribed documents that were on the site, and restored the password protection on January 15th. So from the 15th to the 22nd. Well, if they haven't let them know, that would mean that they actually made the change on what, January 2nd? I'm not seeing that. But anyway, thoughts?
I have none as to why that happened.
Okay, so the 20-day notification requirement, they at least, you know, they it looks like it wasn't like they went forever, but they had not notified them,
mm-hmm.
right? They hadn't notified them at all. Here's the kicker, though, is that in this whole thing, in February 2016, VMG learned at this time that Best Medical Transcription had subcontracted with a New Delhi, India-based company to perform the transcription services for the practices that were impacted by the breach.
Mm.
So now we don't even know for sure where that server was.
No, and we've talked about this before.
This, you know, we talked about it with Mitzi Hill about the, you know, overseas offshoring of services and being sure that things are corrected. So their data was going overseas potentially and they didn't know it.
Yep. Which is common.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good at all, but it's common. You know, so now they came in and all this happened and New Jersey did the investigation and they applied the HIPAA fees, penalties, civil penalties, and they also put them on a corrective action plan for 2 years. So it says they have a third-party professional to conduct a thorough analysis of security risk associated with the storage, transmission, and receipt. Sounds like create, maintain, transmit. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but the receipt of EPHI in VMG buildings and submit a report of those findings to the division within 180 days of the settlement and every year thereafter for 2 years.
Okay.
Okay, so you're going to have to do all of this stuff, so to speak, right?
Right.
And according to this, now we've established that it's at least one BA below, if not two BAs below, where the fault lies.
Right.
And you got to wonder, reference our conversation yesterday, how much recoup money they were getting out of those BAs in their indemnification clause if they had the 20 days. But this is the list of findings that the division alleges that VMG engaged in additional violations of the security rule and the privacy rule with regard to the data breach. Failing to implement a security awareness and training program for all members of its workforce, including management.
Yeah, we see that a lot.
What, that including management part? That even just, if you manage to get security awareness and training, management doesn't show up?
Well, yeah, that's kind of part of it. But even just the whole security awareness training, you know, we talk about that a lot with, you know, even our smaller clients. It's like, we need to be doing security awareness training. And like, oh, we don't have time.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have time for any of it, but still have to do it.
Well, you know, we try to teach people. It's not about having, everybody thinks I don't have time because they think the training needs to be sit down, all 1 hour long course, and everybody's got to be there. No, security awareness training, you can do all kinds of different things. And we give them tools and capabilities and teach them how to do these so that it's 5 minutes here and there, but it's a consistent 5 minutes happening regularly. That's what security awareness training is.
Mm-hmm.
It's over and over and over, little bitty bits. It's not my 1 hour HIPAA training class every right. year.
Yeah. Where it goes back to creating that culture we talk about all the time. It can't be done when you're doing a one hour, you know, once a year thing.
Yeah. It's just as something you check off the list. Then the other is being delayed in identifying and responding to the security incident, mitigating its harmful effects, and documenting the incident and its outcome. There are a lot of things in that one sentence.
Yeah, there is.
And so that delay in identifying and responding to the security incident, you got to wonder what, I'm not sure how they got that based on what we saw, but we'll move on.
Yeah.
Because I mean, clearly they stated it.
Right. I don't know. I mean, because you got identifying, responding, and mitigating, and documenting.
I mean, there's a lot of things that they say they didn't do. I could see maybe that they didn't document the incident and the outcome properly. That happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Mitigating its harmful effects. I don't know how VMG can do more than notify the patients, which it says they did.
Yeah.
And then being delayed in identifying and responding to the security incident. Okay, that's directly related to the BAs. Unless, now it doesn't tell us that they got notified in January 22nd and then they did nothing until something else happened. So we don't know that part.
Right.
And it does mention, you know, that they had to request that Google, because it was in their cache, they had to go and manually remove each patient from there and do all these requests to get it removed. It's not easy once it's in there.
Mm-mm.
So, you know, maybe it's they did the easy way out kind of thing. Well, we let you know. They say they fixed it. We're going on. So you can't do that. Failing to establish and implement procedures to create and maintain retrievable exact copies of EPHI maintained on the FTP site.
You know what that is? That's backup. Just simple backups.
Backup. Improperly disclosing the PHI of its patients. Well, we know that.
Duh.
Failing to maintain a written or electronic log of the number of times the FTP site was accessed.
Mm.
You know, that's a drill down, very specific thing about not logging, not having logs on, you know, oh, well, I only need to have a log on my EHR. I don't need to have one on my FTP site. It doesn't have much PHI on it.
Yeah.
The division further alleged that the public exposure of at least 462 patients, doctor's letters, medical notes, and other reports in BMG's violation of the security rule and privacy rule constituted separate and additional unconscionable commercial practices in violation of the New Jersey Consumer Fraud Act.
Mm.
Bam. So there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And then here are the quotes. You know, I always like to get the quotes from the folks. And the attorney general says, patients entrust doctors with their most intimate healthcare details, and doctors have a legal responsibility to keep that information private and secure, whether it is held in an office file cabinet or stored on a computer server.
Amen.
What?
Amen.
Preach it, brother. Electronically stored data is especially vulnerable to security breaches, and doctors must follow strict rules to safeguard it. When they don't, patients are personally exposed, and the trust they have in their doctors can be irrevocably broken.
Mm, preach it.
Oh, no, he's preaching it, isn't he?
Well, you can't. I mean, you're starting to see this type of verbiage everywhere. Like, people have had enough.
Yeah, it's a patient safety issue and trust in the healthcare system. I mean, it's something I've been talking about. We're running into a problem. We're going to have a failure of trust
mm-hmm.
in the healthcare system. And then you're going to run into a whole lot of other problems. So, you know, they're going to start doing this value-based care. But because I don't trust you, I'm not going to tell you the things that you need to do to make sure that I don't end up being sick. And your job is to keep me from getting sick. But I'm not going to tell you things because I can't trust you. You see, there's a vicious cycle happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So, bang, bang, bang. Psycho, excited.
So let's get into the vendor thing.
Because here it is. The acting director of the Division of Consumer Affairs also had a quote. Although it was a third-party vendor that caused this data breach, VMG is being held accountable because it was their patient data and it was their responsibility to protect it. This enforcement action sends a message to medical practices that having a good handle on your own cybersecurity is not enough. You must fully vet your vendors for their security as well.
Thus, the extreme vendor vetting begins.
Exactly. And it tied in perfectly with what was covered in the HIPAA summit, where there was a session done by this guy that was, he's the security privacy officer for state of West Virginia, you know, one of those big long titles. Mm-hmm. He was funny. He was cool. I got his jokes. He was, you know, country kid. Other people didn't. but he was talking about the way they vet their vendors. And I can tell you, and when I gave this to David, he's like, I can't wait to hear about this. Their due diligence made our due diligence like a preschool pop quiz.
Yeah, and you already get kickback from your due diligence process about it being too invasive.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I don't understand it. You know, this never happens. We don't have to do this. And I've been telling them for years, it's coming. Get mm-hmm. ready now.
Well, as we're learning a little bit, there's reason why you have to dig into your vendors because they ain't doing it.
No, they ain't doing it. So this guy, he was all about, let's, you know, check on our vendors and make sure that you're doing this. So I personally have been saying this for a while. And some of the things that he's found and some of the things that he does are actually kind of scary. One of the things he found is that they had a business associate who, it turns out, they had 230 subcontractors. But of those 230 subcontractors, only 4 of them had BAAs in place. Mm. Yeah. So if he's vetting at that level, he's wanting to see all 230 BAAs from his subcontractor. So when his business associate got vetted, he said, I want to see all your business associate agreements. Well, I just ask if you even have them. People tell me it's like none of my business, you know. Okay.
Yeah, that's proprietary information.
he will do this thing, and I've said this for years. I'll tell people that I can go into any office that's supposed to be doing HIPAA and just with 3 questions have a good idea of exactly what their program is like. And my 3 questions,
can you spell
them?
HIPAA? Where's your NPP and who's your privacy and security officer?
No, I start with who's your privacy and security officer?
See, I got one right.
You got one right. And see what they say. And if they look at each other trying to decide who it is, you know you're not right. If the majority of the group should give you a name right away or something.
They point
right
to the
away.
Guy in a corner with a uniform and a gun. There's our security officer.
Yeah, there you go. You know, oh, well, you know, we have a compliance team. That's acceptable. Something where they are absolutely certain who they're supposed to deal with and who's the one in charge of this stuff. They should know that to the person. Everybody should know that. Then the second question I ask is, do you know how to identify a potential breach of patient information? And you get stuff like, well, I got up from my desk and I didn't log out. Or, you know, those are not potential breaches necessarily. Okay, that's probably a HIPAA violation for your policies. But my guess is your IT people should have that automatically log off. So that's not necessarily a breach unless you're sitting out in the middle of nowhere, you know, you're working at Starbucks, mm-hmm. you know, but that's not what they're talking about. So they should be able to identify. And then the third question is, what do you do when you do identify one? So if they get past the first one, they get past the second one, the third one should be tell the first one.
Yeah.
And, you know, these should be hard.
I go on Facebook and I put it in. tell everybody.
I tell the person sitting next to me, and then we figure out what we're going to do. Okay, so I've said this forever. Well, he basically, he, one of his things that he calls it kicking the tires or checking to see if you're tall enough to ride our ride.
There you go.
Which I loved. Are you? I don't know if you're tall enough to ride our ride. And he said sometimes it get you have to be taller. You know, and we might change that from year to year. But he calls the front desk, and I'm going to start doing this just because it's fun. He will call, and whoever answers the phone, he will ask them, "I'm calling to speak to your privacy and security officer," and see what they do. And see where he goes. And he'll ask questions about identifying. You know, so it's like whoever answers the phone should be able to do these things. And that's what he does. And he makes sure that his contracts include the right to do assessments of their compliance programs. So all the people that tell me, oh, no, you know, you don't get to come in here and look, the times they are a-changing.
Yeah. Well, the bad part about this is, you know, we've had this question a lot from MSPs is like, okay, well, I can't do this to Google or I can't do this to Amazon or Microsoft. I mean, so
he makes the point, just like we do, is you can still get the documentation of, you know, their white paper and all the details that show what their program includes. Mm-hmm. And maybe you can't do those, but those are on the huge ones. No, maybe I can't, but I still go get their white paper. I still do the research. I still make sure I show I documented it and looked into it. And I get my business associate agreement, and I know what's in it. Those are what you're supposed to do. And so he makes that point. He does bring that up. There's not a lot you can do with those, but he does get a lot of pushback, just like we do.
I bet.
You know, the same things. No one makes us do this. He's heard that one. It's proprietary information. He's heard that one. And mine that shocked me because his is so big. This tells you how big the questionnaire is compared to my little preschool.
Yeah.
Is he's actually had somebody say, you're going to need to pay me to complete this assessment. It isn't in our scope of work.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
I want to see the assessment.
Castanias. I know. And supposedly it's published out there. I'm going to see how much I can find on it. I hadn't had a chance to look for it because I'm like, there's no way I'm going to do it. But, you know, it's pages and pages of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I can see where somebody would say that.
And here's another thing. He vets anyone that wants to connect something to the network. Anyone. An IoT, it doesn't matter. It's that's what leaves you wide open. It should be vetted. If it's going to connect to the network, somebody better prove it's been vetted before it does.
Good. I like it.
And they do an annual assessment. It's going to happen every year. Plus, anytime there's a substantive upgrade to the vendor services, systems, or applications, they do another one.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your first example of extreme vendor vetting. And he's talking about if you're not doing this, you're setting yourself up and, you know, all this kind of stuff. So it was very eye-opening then. And then you see this New Jersey deal. And this is one of the things I was going to cover. And then you add to that that the OCR announced their results from a business associate, from the business associate desktop audits.
Mm-hmm.
And these are desktop audits, so they took their word for what they said and what they could document.
Hmm.
This did not go in and actually look around to see if it was true. And they were pretty clear that they knew some of it wasn't true. But it's a desktop audit, so we don't get it. Things like, we've never had a breach.
Yeah.
We've never had a privacy incident. We've never had a security incident. We never had to do any of this.
That just means you ain't looking.
Exactly, and that's kind of their thing. But because it was a desktop audit, they just kind of said, okay, we'll take your word for it. And they only audited 41 BAs, and they got those BAs from the 100 and something covered entities that they audited.
Mm-hmm.
So this came from the list of covered entities, and you know, only 41 of them. Most of them were those that did billing and claims, like, you know, billing services and stuff, or EHR companies, insurance agencies, legal, IT. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're hitting everything. Consultants, collectors, clinical folks, they're hitting everybody. And remember, in the last episode, we talked about the fact that they also mentioned that anybody had a 4 or 5 on the ratings
mm-hmm.
were being turned over to the regional offices to evaluate whether they needed an investigation.
Right.
Well, let's see. Of the 41, 13 didn't get a 4 or 5 on something. So, you know, and you don't know based on these numbers whether, you know, it shows you that the lowest number, that there's 21 that got a 4 on risk management, 21 that got a 4, and 7 that got a 5 on risk management. So 28 of the 41 had a failure rating on risk management, a D or an F. 18 of the 41 had a failure rating on the risk analysis. So, and all but 9 of the 41 said they'd never had a breach. So they said it wasn't applicable to them. So 32 people have never had to notify CE of anything, which that's the one where they're like, you know, that ain't right.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell that the majority of them fall under that 4 or 5. And the same thing with the covered entities. You know, the numbers aren't that different. And when they ran the numbers, you know, so you could see the trend. And
right.
That, you know, the bell curve, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you would expect the bell curve to be centered kind of at a 3, which is a C passing grade. But the bell curve for both of them on risk management, risk analysis is centered at a 4.
Huh. Yeah, they're...
Most of it's at a 4 or 5.
They're very similar in mm-hmm. when you look at the lines.
They're very, very similar. So everything that we learned at the HIPAA Summit about the business associates, and they're not any better than the covered entities. They're not dramatically worse. They're just certainly not better, but that doesn't mean anything if you're not worse than the covered entities. If you were, you were in trouble. That means we have nobody passing.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, even getting a C in the class, so to speak. But with that in mind, we look at that scenario applied to the New Jersey case and the fact that the West Virginia folks say you better be vetting it. So New Jersey's saying you better get out there and be vetting these people. And this $500,000 is what it's worth to you. And you know it's not just $500,000 by the time it's said and done. If the New Jersey Attorney General had you pay over $10,000 for their legal fees and the investigation, what do you think they had to pay for their legal fees and investigation? And what they're going to have to pay the third party to do the risk analysis, because I'm sorry, it's a lot harder to do them when you're under this kind of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So it might cost more. And having it done, you know, the sheer amount of reporting that you'll have to do and stay on top of for the next 2 years. It's not cheap.
Nope.
So, I'm going to be vetting my vendors.
Wait, are you going to do
it? I already do.
I know. You got to make it more extreme.
I know. We've got, I mean, those, you know, yeah, David's worried because he has to fill out these things.
I know, dude. I mean, I'm on the other side of it. I'm like, oh my gosh, not more stuff.
Hey, so, and our questions are not that hard. You even know what the questions are before
start,
you take the test.
Start charging you for these things.
Yeah, go right ahead.
I'm going to try that. I'll fill this out. It's going to be $150.
Yeah, there you go. See how that goes for you. We'll find somebody else. But there in lies the problem. If you look at what they found on the business associates that, you know, the problems that are consistent with the business associates are the same problems that the covered entities have. And they know, and, you know, they try to say nice things because in the audit they say, well, you know, we did okay with the NPP being on the website. We did okay with the, you know, the right content in it. It was okay. Nobody did great. And the timely, they know when to notify. They just don't know what to do about a notification. But the risk management, risk analysis is just, It's not even close to where it needs to be.
Mm-mm.
And there's, you know, there's much more coming because of what these findings are. And if the state attorney general's office are going to start being the more and more enforcement arm, got to wonder, because now you don't have a standard what we want to see. Now it's every single state gets to decide what we want to see.
Man, that could be a mess.
Mm-hmm. And they don't want, you know, in the audit, they were making it clear some of the things that they dinged people on was in the risk management, just in the policies and procedures. Most people have a policy and procedure that just says we're going to do risk management and risk analysis. That's it. But they want to know who's going to do it. How often is it going to happen? What will trigger changes? Who's going to receive it and review it? They want to know all of that in the policies and procedures.
Mm. Yeah. Can't get that whenever you're paying for them online. That's part of the issue. You got the enforcement side that's saying you need to do things more and better and more extreme, and you know it's harder and harder. And then you got the people that are supposedly supplying the solutions that are going, HIPAA made easy. We're making it easier and easier and easier.
We just saw a press release for a new one today, and we go look at the software, and what's the very first thing that was on there?
Yeah, HIPAA, we make HIPAA easy or something like that. It was just crazy.
Yeah.
But it's they're going in polar opposite directions. So the people that are out there supposedly doing the work to help these covered entities and business associates do this stuff, they're going in opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. Everybody wants it to be easy. Yeah. And it is not that hard once you get it to be part of your normal activity.
No. But it's like you tell your clients or your prospects anyway, that if you're coming to us to check off that portion of your list, then go somewhere else because we're not that.
Yeah, we're not for you. I'm at the point now, you know, if that's what you're looking for, we're not for you. Let's don't waste your time or mine.
Right. No, I get it.
And it's surprising. It's surprising what happens when we do that.
I mean, we have to have similar conversations just about security with clients, you know.
You're security first, IT.
I know.
And security first,
it's like
IT.
Well, I think for some clients, they think there's an unless after that. You know.
Uh-huh. Unless I don't want to pay for it.
Exactly. It's like, are you concerned with security? Yes. All right. Are you ready to implement, you know, what it's going to take to get you up to speed? No.
Security's not convenient. Rule number one. Security's not optional. Rule number two. I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's
but you
amazing.
Do have rule number three, which you do respect. It should not impede you from doing your job.
Right.
You have to balance all three.
No. I mean, if I wanted to be the ultimate security company, I'd just come in and shut down your internet access.
No, really?
Then you'd be fine.
Yeah, let's disconnect you from the world.
But things are changing all the time.
Well, and all these people that are business associates that have been, you know, pulling that card that says we don't have to, and we can do 60 days and all this other stuff. It's changing. It's getting very clear.
Well, one thing
they are changing
that I see, and you see it too in the IT world. You'll have an MSP that's, you know, they're going out there and they're saying these covered entities need to be doing X, Y, and Z, and they're not doing it, and they need to hire us to blah blah blah. And then I'll say, well, are you doing this stuff? And they're like, well, no.
Do I have to do it?
Yeah. Why do I have to do it? I'm like, are you kidding me?
It's the same thing.
You have to be doing this stuff too. Like, I don't think it applies to me. And I'm like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting there.
So, but I mean, it's a constant educational process. And at least we've made a lot of headway in the almost 3 years.
I know. We're about to hit 3 years. I know. It's our anniversary.
I know. I'm tired of changing your diaper.
We're not going to talk about what you have to do. Okay. Anyway.
All right. That is our show for today, folks. I want to thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us and share us out on your favorite social media site. Rate us in our awesome podcasting app. If you don't already have it, go get it. Help us spread the word. We always appreciate it. send in your questions to contact@helpmewithhipaa.com. And remember, for Donna and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.